download from Triple J.
For more music, current affairs, comedy and culture, triplej.net.au.
And now...
On Hack.
Yes, and today on Hack, the future of technology.
It'd be like sort of using a machine to get the contents of a shopping trolley, rip it into bits, and then build a cat.
Teleporting, holograms, farming in the sky.
A 30-story building growing a variety of crops year-round. One square New York City block in footprint was calculated by one of our classes to be able to feed about 50,000 people.
And text message bombs.
You can go to the police and the police will send automatically generated text messages to that phone, and it will basically disable the phone completely.
And what technology is missing in your life? What would you like to see in the future? 1-300-055-36 is the number. I'm Kate O'Toole. This is Hack.
Future Week on Triple J.
Long distance flights suck, don't they? They're bad for the environment, they emit loads of carbon, and they're boring. How awesome would it be if you could teleport instead, just like they did in Star Trek? Teleporting an atom has been done. Could we ever teleport a human?
Transporter, stand by.
Teleporting at its basic level is a very simple process. It works just like a fax.
In your board.
Energized.
You can imagine having a large box. You might step into it, and then through whatever process, every single particle in your body, every bit of your muscle, every particle in your cells and your brain and so forth would be measured. Then that information would travel along a phone line, say, down to, I know where you'd like to go to, Rio de Janeiro. They'd have vats of chemicals and they just use that information to build up an exact copy of you. So, yep, we're done. And then they destroy you and rip you down into component parts and put you in the vat.
I feel a little bit uncomfortable about the destroying part.
Yeah, yeah. Supposing I was going to be copied and I wanted to step out of a box in Rio de Janeiro, I'd want to be right. And it turns out that this business of measuring something, if you believe in quantum mechanics, then every time you measure something, you change it. At the very best, if you did that, then the thing that stepped out of Rio de Janeiro would have lost half of the information that made up you.
So we're not quite at the stage of teleporting people. What can you teleport?
There's a process called quantum teleportation that it overcomes this business of measurement changing things. And the way it does is the actual measurement itself destroys the thing. This has already been done experimentally. States of light, so sort of photons, or the states of atoms, like their spins, or the states of ions. These are very small systems, and so because they're so small, you can sort of control the measurement and the transfer process, and you can handle that amount of information reasonably well.
So will that technology ever lead to people being able to be teleported?
Physics says that that's possible. Of course, in practice, again, if you can just imagine trying to do such a thing, it'd be like sort of using a machine to get the contents of a shopping trolley, rip it into bits, and then build a cat. In practice, I think that is so far off, it's not really going to affect the lives of our kids or their kids.
What are the practical applications of being able to teleport small things?
It's a vital sort of design element in quantum computers, which are a hypothesized device that we might be able to build in the quite near term. And what these things do, it's trying to use this complexity to do computations much, much faster than any normal computer could possibly imagine. And it's even being used, or the kind of quantum information ideas are even being used to make unbreakable codes that even, basically the laws of physics say you can never break this code, and those kinds of technologies are being sold to obviously sort of military applications, and also banking institutions across the world are using these kinds of things.
30 seconds and counting.
That's Joe Hope. He's a physicist from the Australian National University. Now, you heard from Mark Pesci on Monday. Mark, some people call you a futurist. You said you prefer to call yourself a presentist. You're also a lecturer at Sydney Uni and you've got a consulting company called Future Street. You're busy. Does this idea of teleporting excite you?
I guess the whole part about being killed after you get teleported is not so interesting to me.
Yeah, I found that a little bit creepy as well.
But
a bit of the shine off the idea.
Yeah, in terms of where it means, where it's going for computing, that's really interesting. You know, we think about if you have a brand new computer, you probably got what they call a dual core. It's got two little processors inside of it that's tooling away. And quantum computing basically says, well, look, if there are parallel universes and quantum mechanics says, yes, there are parallel universes. Why don't we just pretend that the computer is in all of the other universes? And so when you're doing it, you're not using two cores. You're using two universes, four universes, 10,000 universes, 10 with 500 zeros universes. And that's why they can calculate so quickly.
Yeah, that just blows my mind thinking about that. It's like imaginary computing. Oh, yeah, sure, I can do it. I'm just using all the other universes.
Imaginary universes.
Now, Mark, this year we've seen the release of some pretty amazing phone technology and communications technology. What's next?
Well, we're starting to see a bit of a ground war over what direction the phones are going to go in. We've seen the Apple has the iPhone, and now Google has their own phone, but it's only out in America called the G phone or the G1. And we're going to see now new phones. The idea of a touch phone, a phone that you play with your finger, is becoming, I think, sort of the dominant idea now. But it's hard. That's all brand new. If you think about what computers started using mice. That's over 20 years ago now. So Macintosh is 25 years old almost. It took us a couple of years to figure out how to make things work well with the mice and how to do things well with the mice. Well, we're pretty much in the same place now with using our fingertips. We have to do this all over again. We have to learn how to make it what works and what doesn't work. And there's going to be a bit of a turf war around that.
And what about the things that you can do with that machine? How long until we have, for example, video over internet on mobile phone?
Well, you already have video over internet. There's a company called Quik that actually has a little application that will run on a lot of the higher-end phones. And you turn it on, you start your own video channel right there, broadcasting right from your phone, and someone can then pick it up if they go to the website. They can see the same stuff that you're broadcasting.
So can you use that on any phone, though, across any network? Is this where the problem starts?
You probably need a good data plan, because you'll start chewing up a lot of data. But it should work on most 3G phones, on most 3G networks.
Stay with us, Mark. We're going to continue to talk about the future of technology today on Hack.
Still to come on Hack.
And in fact, what we're going to get into before 6 o'clock, the future of food, how we grow our food. Could it be suspended in the sky?
If we're vertical farming, everybody thinks, oh gosh, we're out of land and therefore we got to go vertical.
And also future design solutions that will prevent crimes.
Any hacker could tell you how to make this, really. It's a very simple computer program generating the messages and then just sending them out through a mobile phone link.
That's text message bombs. Still to come on Hack. I'm Kate O'Toole.
Future Week on Triple J.
And welcome back to this very exciting night.
The most important moment in the recent US election was not finding out Obama's favorite type of pastry.
And I like pie.
It was the CNN hologram interview with Will.i.am.
We're joined now via hologram by Will.i.am. Will, thanks very much for being with us. How is this night for you?
Oh, this is great. All this technology, I'm being beamed to you like it's Star Wars and stuff.
This technology might have blown you and me away, but for hologram experts like Frank DeFreitas, CNN's claims of using hologram technology were an annoying lie.
It wasn't a hologram. There's a lot of controversy already on the internet because of that. And basically what they did is they used traditional methods of broadcasting an image into a studio to make it appear as if the person was there as a three-dimensional hologram. Very similar to the way that Star Wars did the R2-D2 projection of Princess Leia. Unfortunately, CNN said that it was a hologram.
Frank's been working in holography for 25 years, and he's speaking to you down the telephone line from Pennsylvania.
In a short answer as possible, holography is the actual replication of objects that already exist in reality. For instance, when we do a hologram of, say, a statue, it's not like a photograph of that statue. It's not a representative image of that statue. It's actually a replication of that statue, only the only thing that's playing back is light.
Right, okay.
We could be doing that between ourselves. We don't know what each other looks like right now, but we could see what each other is looking like through transmission of those types of images.
Yeah, in 3D.
In 3D, yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm very skinny, Frank, so it might not make much difference.
Well, I'll make up for your skinniness because I've got a little bit of extra weight on me, so we'll balance things out.
Yeah, sweet.
We're doing this interview with you this way because it's a lot quieter than having you in that crowd.
While Frank says that the CNN election interviews were a ripoff, it does give us some idea of how holograms will be used in the future.
We'll be seeing images projected into our homes for entertainment. We could also go into fine art uses of holography, where artists are using holography to express themselves creatively. We also can look at advertising, both in print, where you could open up a magazine and see a product on the page three-dimensionally instead of a flat picture. Anything that we can do with traditional type of imaging right now will just seem 1,000 times better. We will be seeing images projected into surgeons' office, so surgeons can remotely work on the image of an internal organ from a distance.
How will a doctor work on the image of someone remotely?
Well, here's what's happening. We have someone who's on the operating table on the West Coast, and we have a surgeon who's going to work on that person on the East Coast. That person's organ can be holographically transmitted as an image to the surgeon on the East Coast. The surgeon wears special gloves that can mimic and measure each movement of the surgeon's hands. Now, he or she will operate on that image. And what will happen on the West Coast, there'll be robotic hands, which will mimic exactly the surgeon's hands on the East Coast.
Frank, that is wild.
Yes.
It's crazy talk.
Well, you know, things always sound a little crazy before they become common. You know, at one time with the telephone, where people were very suspicious and superstitious about telephones at one time because they didn't believe that a person's voice should be disconnected from their body.
Now, when Frank first got into holograms at the age of 8, people were saying holograms will be everywhere within 20 years. And now they're still saying it's another 20 years. But Frank thinks that this time it's for real.
I think this time around we're probably a little bit closer than 20 years away. I would say maybe within the next 5 or 10 years we are really going to start to see most of the things that we've taken for granted in front of our eyes as flat images. We're going to see them as three-dimensional holograms.
I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it. That's Frank DeFreitas, a holographer from Pennsylvania, beaming his voice to Tom Tilley using old-fashioned analog technology. Now, speaking of phone technology, if you've ever lost your mobile phone or had it stolen, listen up. There could be a design solution that makes ripping off mobiles a waste of time. The text message bomb.
Hack.
Now, Professor Kees Dorst heads up the Designing Out Crime Research Centre at the University of Technology in Sydney. As the name suggests, they use creative design to try to eliminate crime. The New South Wales Attorney General's Department has given them some money to work on particular problems. Professor Dorst has already made some simple changes in Europe that have made a difference. He's speaking here with Michael Atkin.
There's a couple of squares there where lots of tourists get robbed. And we did an analysis there and found out that it was lots of little streets coming onto irregular squares. And you think, well, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem is that in those little streets, they are quite dark. Your eyes aren't attuned to the light. You come onto the square and you have to orient yourself. So you blink, people come from behind you, slash open your backpack and your wallet is gone. We put signage on the square, but then quite small signs. So if you came onto the square, you would just keep on walking to the middle of the square because you saw that it was information there. And in walking, you would actually be out of the danger zone, your eyes would attune to the light, and you would be completely safe. What is happening is often this choreography of people getting in the wrong place and creating a crime opportunity while they're not aware of it. And if you just have to change behavior of people a little bit through subtle design, and people are a lot safer.
Tell me about the text message bomb. What is it and how does it work?
It's in use in a couple of countries in Europe. It could be used in Australia, I think. If your mobile phone gets stolen, or you lose it and somebody picks it up and doesn't return it to you, you can go to the police and the police will send automatically generated text messages to that phone, and it will basically disable the phone completely. So in the countries where that happens now, the second-hand thievery market of mobile phones has no value whatsoever anymore. So they're not stolen anymore.
So how does the technology work with that text message bomb? What exactly is it doing?
Any hacker could tell you how to make this, really. It's a very simple computer program generating the messages and then just sending them out through a mobile phone link. One of the priorities that we got from the Attorney General's department is there's a lot of theft from motor vehicles in some areas, and often it's sat-nav systems that get stolen.
Continue to the right, when hit the third left.
They do transmit stuff and do receive stuff, and you could actually disable them in the same way, so like an SMS bomb. And you could even find the cars, of course, when they're stolen.
400 yards, turn right, then left turn ahead.
Tell me about the safety catch bracelet. What does this look like and how does it work?
What it is, it's a nice looking funky bracelet, but when you break the chain, actually what the bracelet does is it sends a message to your mobile phone, and the mobile phone contacts the police that something is wrong. It's a bit tricky because sometimes a bracelet gets caught behind something and it breaks anyway. You can actually interrupt that stream of information to the police then. The mobile phone can actually send out information about where you are when this happens, because you're always between different mobile phone cells.
What are you working on at the moment that's really exciting?
We're starting up lots of different projects at the same time. I think the interesting thing here is that this Designing Out Crime Center is at the Faculty of Design, Architecture and Building. So the solutions that we're looking for are partly to do with product design, partly to do with the built environment where things are used, and partly to do with urban planning too. And we are talking with companies like RailCorp to look at interesting crime scenes around railway stations to see what we can do there.
Can you look into the future for us now and talk about what sort of designs you think will reduce crime in the future?
In the long run, what this is actually about is improving the quality of our environment and improving the quality of our products. So I want to see it as a positive thing, not just sort of battling against thieves or whatever, but really saying, well, if we do create a better, also more beautiful environment, less crime will happen. And it's important because it keeps us apart from one another.
So your creativity in the future, you would hope that reduces the suspicion and barriers between people.
That's the ultimate aim of the whole thing. If you have a healthy society, you can actually talk with each other on the street. And if you've got a society where people are fearful and feel under threat, then you can't. And that's horrible. You don't want to live in a society like that.
Professor Kees Dorst from the Designing Out Crime Research Centre at UTS, speaking there with Michael Atkin. Mark Pesci, futurist, consultant, inventor, what do you make about some of those ideas?
Well, I think putting a kill switch inside of a device like that is kind of dangerous, because someone's going to hack in to find the kill switch, and then you're going to have a whole bunch of devices getting killed, probably against their will, not because they were stolen, but because someone actually hacked into the code. So you have to be very careful putting kill switches. But we've got so many devices now have an ability to track their location with GPS. Phones have GPS in them, and sat-nav systems are GPS systems, that it should be possible to, rather than to shut a device down when it gets stolen, have the device call for help when it gets stolen, and then the police can use that information to track the device.
Now, Mark, we invited the Minister for Broadband, Senator Stephen Conroy, onto Hack because we really wanted to hear about the future of the internet. You might remember this government talked a lot about broadband in their election campaign. We also wanted to hear the latest in their plans for an ISP-level internet filter. Unfortunately, Senator Conroy declined the invitation. Mark, the expressions of interest have gone out for ISPs to take part in a filtering trial that's expected to happen over the first half of next year. Do you think the future of Australian internet is ISP-level filtering?
I don't. I think that ISP-level filtering it's not just going to slow the internet down. It's not going to work. It's not going to give people the answer they want. The only place that you should really think about it being safe is if you're trying to protect small children. But small children should be watched the entire time they're online. The filter isn't necessary for small children because parents are there or caretakers are there keeping an eye on them. For older people, it's going to be so easy to get around the filter. No matter how good the filter is, it's going to be easier to get around it, that it's providing no practical value.
So it's not necessarily the issue that it will slow the web down. That's been one criticism, and yet a spokesperson for the minister has, sent me an email saying, there is an example of an ISP that uses you know, ISP level filtering, it says it doesn't affect it at all. And
yeah, there's no question that it will slow it down because the computers have to think more as they're passing the signals. They have to take a look at what you're doing and see if they're going to allow that, which, you know, is something that's just objectionable at so many levels. That does take time. It's going to slow it down, and it's also imperfect. It may, in fact, end up filtering sites that shouldn't be filtered. And we don't actually know what sites are on this magical list of sites to be filtered because that list is secret. And so we can't actually know whether we're able to get to a site or whether something's down or what's going on.
Now, the other thing that the government's working on at the moment, they're evaluating proposals for the national broadband network. Mm. This is something that the government's committed to invest up to $4.7 billion in. Will that be enough money to catch Australia up?
It's a good start. It's a good start. I think that's the current expectation is that's probably about half of what it'll cost. It'll probably cost about $10 billion. So someone's got to up the other $10 billion, other $5 billion to get there.
Is this the right path?
Well, it depends on the technology we use. I mean, right now in Hong Kong or in Japan, you can get 50 to 100 megabits. I have friends in America who wouldn't leave their house because they were getting 100 megabit fiber optic connections and they could download movies instantaneously and all these different things. Is it going to catch us up? We're going to see. We have to, I mean, broadband is a race. It's not something that you just do. It's something you always have to sort of keep up with. The place that the technology will be going to is they call fiber to the node, which means that fiber is going to be going out to a block of flats, not to each flat. That gives us a lot of capability to make it faster as time goes on.
On Hack this afternoon, the future of technology. Mark Pesci was just talking about the future of the internet. What are your techno suggestions? Do you have a piece of technology that you would just love somebody to invent? Are you hanging for it? Or maybe you're just hanging for somebody to make it commercial, make it cheap enough for you to buy one. I'd love to see your suggestions. You can text them in 1975 7555. That's 1975 7555.
Hack, Kato Tool, Triple J.
Now, according to the UN, the world will need to double food production by 2050 to feed the estimated 3 billion extra people living on the planet. So rather than clearing more land for crops, is the answer vertical farming? Imagine not just using skyscrapers to live and work, but using them also to grow food, like a giant multi-story greenhouse. It's just a concept at the moment, but the scientist behind the idea reckons that a prototype should be on its way within a year.
Imagine a 30-floor skyscraper that's completely transparent, growing a different food crop on every level. No pesticides or herbicides, no weather-related problems, less food miles, just fresh food grown in the cities all year round.
Hydroponic farming, which I would recommend for any indoor situation with regards to vertical farming, uses about 70% less water than outdoor farming. And aeroponic farming, which is another version of indoor farming, in which a fine mist of water laced with nutrients is sprayed over the root systems of plants, uses 70% less water than hydroponic farming.
Dr. Dixon DePomier is a professor of environmental sciences and microbiology at Columbia University in New York, and he came up with the concept of vertical farming.
A 30-story building growing a variety of crops year-round, one square New York City block in footprint, was calculated by one of our classes to be able to feed about 50,000 people. So, and I don't imagine that most vertical farms will take the shape of a very, very large building. I imagine most of them will be integrated into situations like restaurants and schools and hospitals based on an initial prototype.
It all sounds too good to be true. No longer would we have to clear land for farming or rely on the weather, but vertical farming does have its critics.
Natural farming versus synthetic farming, I think, would be a better comparison.
Bruce Bugby is a crop physiology professor at Utah State University.
The sun only shines on the top layer, so you got to use electric lights. It takes an incredible amount of electricity. It's much cheaper, like 100 times cheaper, to grow the food on the ground using sunlight.
But do you think in a world where the population will rapidly expand that we're going to be able to sustain ourselves from traditional farming methods?
Well, we can't do vertical farming either. Solar cells are the best ones that are in commercial use, are about 15% efficient. So that means it takes 6 acres of solar cells to run 1 acre of sun. But it's worse than that because the electric lights, the best electric lights, are only about 30% efficient. So now we take 6 acres times 3, so we have 18 acres of solar cells to run the electric lights for 1 acre. In another 50 years, instead of 18 acres of solar cells, maybe we'll get that down to 3. And 3 acres of solar cells for 1 acre of plant growth. Well, wait, that's still 3 to 1.
The prototypes have to be developed first, and they have to be played with, so to speak, at a research level to develop and to explore all of the questions that you'd raise with regards to the energy needs, the way you handle water, the kinds of crops you grow, the way you keep out plant diseases, and how do you make it efficient? And I think that's all possible to do if you build prototypes first and allow the intellectual community to have their way with it.
But Professor Bruce Bugbee argues the way forward is to use land smarter.
The key thing we have to do is eat less meat. That's a big burden on the world food economy. And you probably know the food chain analogy, 10 acres of land to produce the equivalent of 1 acre of food crops when you feed it to cattle. China has roughly the same land area as the United States, and it has 5 times the number of people. And they largely feed themselves by very efficient use of land.
That was Professor Bruce Bugbee, who specializes in crop physiology at Utah University. He was speaking there with Caitlin Sorey. Mark Pesci, do you think vertical farming is the way to go?
Well, we've seen, in fact, I think 2 inventions just last year on the New Inventors with vertical farming, and both of them looked really interesting. I don't think we've actually seen, I do want to see a tall block, you know, a 30-story block with food growing down the side. We still haven't seen that yet. I've seen
because they looked at growing food on the outside of buildings.
Yeah, rather than putting it on the inside, which is what the professor there was talking about, putting it on the outside surface of the building. And it's great because it cleans the air, keeps the building cool, and you get food out of it.
1-9-7-5-7-5-5 is the number that people have texted in their techno suggestions, stuff that's not around at the moment that they would just love somebody to invent or to make cheap enough for them to buy. I'd like to be able to stop time to catch up or chill out. I'd like to be able FTL drives, faster than light spacecraft and terraforming. Let us make Mars habitable. That sounds awesome. A toaster that toasts instantly. That doesn't sound like too big of an ask, does it? A kettle that boils instantly. Thanks, Mark. Also, a car that goes sideways so you don't have to reverse park. And Emma, what was yours?
Wireless power is the one that I've been interested in for quite a while. Apparently, there's already some talk of it being possible. But can you imagine taking all the wires out of your home?
That sounds pretty good. Where's that up to, Mark?
They actually can do it. They have pads now that you can place sort of like your mobile phone, your laptop and things on, and it'll charge when they're on the pad. So it's wireless. You still have to be rather close together. If you're talking about sending it throughout your entire flat or something, we're not quite there yet.
Now, somebody else texted in headphone speakers without cables to get caught on. I think they might do those already. Somebody else is in favour of teleportation despite the whole destroy scenario. Mark, what sorts of technology really blows your mind?
I think the most exciting thing that we're going to see sometime in probably the next 12 months is synthetic life. In other words, this is something that is built from scratch, molecule by molecule. It's not based on any other living organism. It's something that is handmade by man that is a living organism. And we're close. They keep on getting closer and closer, quite close.
Because when you think about other ways people have been able to generate things, it's from like a plant cell mm-hmm. or from some other cell that has come from a living thing.
Right, and this is just, we're starting from scratch.
So what scratch? Like what sorts of, I mean, we heard in one description before of chopping up a shopping trolley to build a cat. This is not what you're talking about.
No. Well, I mean, it's because we understand now the basic number of genes and the basic way the genes need to work in order to make something alive. So we can actually just hand make each of those genes, splice them together, stick them in something that's got a wall like a cell on a human cell, and zap.
And then on a dark night.
Exactly.
Hook it up to.
It's alive.
Well, when is that going to happen, Mark Petty?
Well, we'd expected it was going to happen this year, but it looks like it'll happen early in 2009.
As long as you don't say 20 years, because that's the magic number where we know that you're probably lying. Thanks very much for speaking to us today, Mark Petty, futurist, consultant, and inventor. Thanks very much for your text messages as well. Tomorrow, it's the final day of Future Week. We're finishing early, of course, in Future Week. Last hack show for 2008. You can join in by telling us, what's your plan for next year? Do you have big plans for 2009? And you'll also hear about how Australia will change. That's on Hack tomorrow.
Journalism. Hack on Triple J.